All right, everyone, get ready, because today we're diving headfirst into a Supreme Court case. It's sure to get those legal gears turning.
It's a case that really highlights that classic tension between state power and the Constitution's vision of a unified national market.
We're talking dueling opinions, accusations of economic balkanization being thrown around.
And would you believe it? The whole thing revolves around milk.
You heard that right, milk.
Let's set the stage here.
Yeah, take us back in time.
Back in the 1940s, steady milk supply was a big deal, obviously. And our main player here is H.P. Hood & Sons, a Massachusetts milk distributor.
Okay, Hood Milk Distributors.
And to keep those Boston milk glasses full, they were already getting a good chunk of their supply from New York farms, like about 8%.
Gotcha.
They already had 3 milk receiving plants up and running in New York.
So they were no stranger to getting milk from New York.
Exactly.
Okay.
But to keep up with the demand, you know, and those Boston health standards were pretty strict. They wanted to open a 4th plant in Greenwich, New York. It seemed like a pretty logical business move, right?
Sounds pretty straightforward, yeah.
Well, New York decided to slam on the brakes and denied their application.
Oh, what? Why?
They claimed another Hood plant would lead to, and I quote, destructive competition.
Destructive competition?
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
And they said it could even cause milk shortages in their local markets.
Interesting. So they were worried about their own dairy farmers and making sure New Yorkers had enough milk, I guess.
That's how it appeared on the surface.
Yeah.
But this seemingly local dispute actually triggers a much bigger constitutional question. It boils down to the Commerce Clause.
Here we go.
Can a state basically build walls against interstate trade, even if they've got what seem like good reasons?
Right, because the Constitution is all about promoting free trade between states, right?
Exactly.
So what happened? Did the courts just side with New York and say, hey, you're in charge of your own milk?
The lower courts, yeah, they initially upheld New York's decision. They said, you can deny that permit. But Hood & Sons, they weren't backing down.
They took it to the Supreme Court. Classic.
All the way to the top.
So what did the Supreme Court say?
This is where it gets good. In a 5-4 decision, they actually ruled in favor of Hood & Sons.
No way.
They said New York's actions, they violated the Commerce Clause.
Wow. So even though New York had these concerns about its own market, the Supreme Court said, nope, you can't block Hood just to protect your own dairy industry.
That's exactly right. Justice Jackson, who wrote the majority opinion, he had some strong words about this. He warned against what he called economic balkanization.
Economic balkanization. What a phrase.
Right. Basically, he was arguing that the Commerce Clause is there to prevent states from becoming like isolated economic islands.
So no state can just shut itself off from the rest of the country economically, even if it thinks it's doing what's best for its own people.
The court was pretty clear on that.
But hold on a second. Wasn't New York really trying to do what was best for its people? Like, they were worried about milk shortages, about their farmers, about competition. It's not like they were being malicious, right?
That's the tricky part. The court acknowledged that states do have a legitimate interest in protecting their citizens, of course. But in this case, they saw New York's actions as something else.
Like what?
Like a disguised attempt at economic protectionism.
Ooh, protectionism. That's a loaded word. So they were basically saying New York was just trying to shield its own dairy industry from competition.
That was the majority's view.
But how could they be sure? New York said they were worried about shortages and all that.
Well, the court argued that New York didn't really provide enough evidence to back up their claims.
So the court was like, show me the receipts. Prove that Hood is actually going to cause all these problems.
Mm. Exactly. They were basically saying, you can't just throw around these arguments about shortages and destructive competition without solid evidence to support them. It seemed more like they were playing favorites with their own local businesses.
So the court drew a line in the sand between legitimate state interests, like public health, and protectionism disguised as something else.
Precisely. And this distinction is huge. It sets a powerful precedent for future cases involving the Commerce Clause. It's a message to states that they can't just use their regulatory power to stifle competition from other states, even if they claim it's for the good of their own people.
Wow. Sounds like this case really shook things up.
But
I have a feeling this isn't the whole story.
Oh, not even close. This was a 5-4 decision, remember? There were some pretty fiery dissenting opinions.
Oh, I bet. So what were the other justices saying? What were their issues with the majority's view?
Well, that's a story for part 2 of our deep dive.
All right, welcome back, everyone. So before we left off, we were just starting to get into those dissenting opinions in Hood v. DeMond. It wasn't exactly a slam dunk for the majority, was it?
Oh, not at all.
Yeah.
It was a 5-4 decision. And as we touched on, Justice Frankfurter, he had some pretty strong feelings about how the majority handled things. He thought they were being a little too, I don't know, inflexible with their interpretation of the Commerce Clause, especially this whole dormant Commerce Clause idea.
Okay. Full disclosure, I'm a little lost.
Yeah.
Dormant Commerce Clause. What is that exactly?
Right.
Why was Justice Frankfurter so bothered by it?
It's not like it's written right there in the Constitution or anything. Dormant Commerce Clause, beware.
Right, right.
It's more like an implied power, something that flows from the Commerce Clause.
Right.
The basic idea is that the Commerce Clause doesn't just give Congress power to regulate interstate commerce. It also kind of puts limits on states, even if Congress hasn't specifically passed a law about it.
So even if Congress is silent on an issue, the Commerce Clause can still prevent a state from messing with interstate commerce.
Exactly. States can't pass laws that put too much of a burden on interstate commerce or discriminate against it. And in Hood v. DeMond, the majority was basically saying New York's actions, they went against this unwritten rule about keeping interstate commerce flowing smoothly.
But Justice Frankfurter, he wasn't convinced.
Nope. He wasn't buying it. He thought each case should be looked at individually, carefully weighing both the state's interests and what's good for the nation as a whole.
So instead of this bright line rule, he preferred a more case-by-case approach.
Exactly. He was worried that if the court was too strict, any state regulation that even slightly affected interstate commerce could get thrown out. He was calling for a more practical approach, you know, giving states some space to manage their own economies as long as they weren't blatantly discriminating against businesses from other states.
So he was trying to walk this tightrope between a free-flowing national economy and letting states do their thing.
Exactly.
But didn't we mention another dissenter, someone who was even more worried about the court overstepping?
Absolutely. Justice Black, he had a whole other set of concerns. He thought the court was butting into areas that should be left to Congress. To him, it was Congress's job to regulate commerce, not the courts.
He was all about that separation of powers. Didn't want the court acting like a legislature.
You got it. He thought the majority's view on the Dormant Commerce Clause gave the court too much power and potentially weakened the role of elected officials in setting economic policy.
Okay, so we've got these three perspectives clashing.
Yeah.
The majority pushing for a unified national market, Justice Frankfurter urging for a more balanced approach, and Justice Black worried about the court getting too big for its britches.
And it's this mix of opinions that makes Hood v. DeMond such a landmark case, you know? It forces us to really think about the tension between the states and the federal government and who gets to call the shots when it comes to the economy.
It's wild that a fight over a milk plant could lead to such a deep legal and philosophical debate.
Right. But that's the thing about legal precedents. Decisions made decades ago, they can still have a huge impact on how we understand and interpret the law today.
Speaking of impact, how has Hood v. DeMond changed the legal landscape since then? It didn't just disappear, did it?
No way. This case has had a long-lasting effect, shaping tons of legal battles over state regulations that could affect interstate commerce. We're talking environmental laws, waste disposal rules, even those weird state laws about shipping wine across state lines. Hood v. DeMond's influence is everywhere.
Give us the juicy details, some specific examples of how this case is still relevant today. How's it shaping our understanding of the Commerce Clause in the 21st century?
Well, take the whole debate about online sales tax, for example.
Aye.
For years, states struggled to figure out how to collect sales tax on stuff people bought online from out-of-state retailers. It gave online businesses a huge advantage over brick-and-mortar stores, and states were losing a lot of tax revenue.
It was like the Wild West of online shopping back then.
Totally. And you know what case kept coming up in all those legal challenges and policy discussions?
Hood v. DeMond.
Bingo! States argued that not being able to collect sales tax was like a penalty on interstate commerce. It put them at a disadvantage and made it harder for them to manage their own economies effectively.
So a case about milk helped shape how we tax online shopping. Wow.
It's a crazy legal journey. And that's just one example. Think about the gig economy, platforms like Uber and Airbnb. States are wrestling with how to regulate these new business models, you know, trying to find a balance between workers, consumers, and local businesses.
Right.
And guess what pops up again?
Hood v. DeMond. I'm starting to see a pattern here.
It's like a legal echo bouncing through the decades. The core issues in Hood v. Dumont are just as relevant today. This tug of war between a unified national market and giving states the power to handle their own affairs.
It's a tough balancing act, right? You want to encourage economic growth and innovation, but you also want states to be able to address their own local concerns.
Exactly. And that's what makes Hood v. Dumont so fascinating. There's no easy answer. But it gives us a framework to think about these issues, some key principles that courts can use as they navigate these complex legal battles.
Like a compass, showing the general direction, but not every single step.
Perfect analogy. Hood v. Dumont reminds us that the law isn't stuck in the past. It's constantly changing to keep up with the world around us. And it highlights the importance of judicial review, how courts play a crucial role in making sure the Constitution stays relevant in a world that never stops changing.
Welcome back to the final stretch of our deep dives. It's been quite a journey, hasn't it?
We've gone from milk in the 40s to online shopping and the gig economy, all thanks to one Supreme Court case.
H.P. Hood & Sons, Inc. v. Dumont, a case that reminds us how much power the past can have over the present.
It's amazing how a case about something as basic as milk is still being talked about and used by courts all over the country.
It really makes you think about how states can use their power, how interstate commerce works.
And how all those pieces fit together in our national economy.
We've covered the facts of the case, looked at those dissenting opinions, and even touched on how Hood v. Dumont is influencing legal battles today.
Right, right.
But let's get to the heart of it. Why should we, here in 2025, still care about a milk dispute from way back in the 1940s? What's the big takeaway?
That's the key question, isn't it? This case isn't just a history lesson. Hood v. Dumont set a precedent that's echoed through our legal system, serving as a guidepost for courts trying to figure out the ever-changing relationship between states and interstate commerce.
So it's more than just a historical footnote.
Absolutely.
Give me some solid examples of how this case is still relevant today.
Well, think about the whole debate we had about internet sales tax.
Okay, yeah.
States were struggling for years trying to collect sales tax on purchases made online from businesses in other states. Brick-and-mortar stores were at a real disadvantage, and states were losing tons of revenue.
Oh, I remember those days. It felt like a free-for-all online.
Exactly. And guess what case kept popping up in legal challenges and policy discussions? Hood v. Dumont. States argued that not being able to collect those taxes was a burden on interstate commerce. It put them at a disadvantage and made it harder to manage their own economies.
So a case about milk ended up shaping how we tax online purchases. That's quite a journey.
And that's just one example. Think about the gig economy, platforms like Uber and Airbnb.
Okay, yeah.
States are trying to figure out how to regulate these new types of businesses, trying to keep things fair for workers, consumers, and local businesses. And guess what?
Don't tell me Hood v. Dumont makes another appearance.
You got it. It's a key precedent guiding courts as they weigh those potential burdens on interstate commerce against the state's interest in regulating these new industries.
It's like this legal echo reminding us that the issues at the heart of Hood v. Dumont are just as important today. This tension between a unified national market and giving states the power to run their own show.
Exactly. It's a balancing act. You want to encourage economic growth and innovation, but you also want to make sure states can address their own local concerns.
Right. That makes sense.
And that's what makes Hood v. Dumont so interesting. There's no simple solution. It gives us a framework to think about these complex issues, key principles, to help courts navigate these evolving legal battles.
Like a roadmap, not turn-by-turn directions, but a sense of the overall route.
Great way to put it. It reminds us that the law isn't static. It's always adapting to the world around us. And it underscores how important judicial review is. Courts play a vital role in making sure the Constitution remains relevant in a world that never stops changing.
Well, folks, we've reached the end of our deep dive into H.P. Hood & Sons, Inc. v. Dumont. Hopefully you've gained a new appreciation for how this case, a case about milk from back in the 1940s, is still shaping our understanding of commerce, state power, and how they interact. It's a reminder that legal precedents can have a lasting impact, influencing the way we navigate the complexities of our world. So until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.
And stay curious.